the reality of rock bottom for me was that moment where you couldn't even tell yourself you love yourself. So then I really got serious in a lot of ways about how do I actually find help? I finally realized my mind was broken. And where that was such an empowering thought to me was, I am broken as a thought to, that's awesome. Now I can figure out, I can fix things. I am broken, but now I at least am empowered to find a solution and find an answer to go fix myself.
Welcome to the Tango Tango podcast. Real, raw, and unfiltered conversations with veterans and those who support them. Tune in, be inspired, and walk away stronger.
Welcome to the Tango Tango podcast. I'm your host, retired First Sergeant Lloyd Knight, and we have honest and unscripted dialogue between a retired First Sergeant, and we got a great guest on today. First of all, no, we're not related, although everybody thinks Zach's my son and occasionally my brother, but we are brothers from another mother. And Zach is one of the coolest dudes out there that I know. He's involved a lot. He's a police officer veteran. He's an Army reservist veteran. He's an entrepreneur. He runs nonprofits. Married to a great girl. Father of a brand new German Shepherd. So, and then one of the most important things, he's director of communications for Atlanta. So, Zach, welcome to the Tango Tango podcast.
I appreciate you having me, brother. And you say brother occasionally that we're confused as brothers. I don't know, man. Given the age range here and the difference in ages, I don't know if I would qualify as brother.
hey, watch it. My mom's listening too. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because Zach and I have been on podcasts. We've done so much together, but this is kind of a different format. So I'm really curious to see where this conversation is going to go. But hey, we'll take it like we always take it. And I know some of these answers. So Zach, I know you're from Georgia, but what part of Georgia and what'd your childhood look like?
Man, people say they're from Atlanta, and these days Atlanta is like ball ground or my wife, she's from Monroe, and that's considered quote unquote Atlanta. And I said, that's all nonsense. I'm a Grady baby. So if anybody ever says, that's my one claim to fame, being a Grady baby, truly from Atlanta, born and raised right here. And childhood was awesome, man. My dad's a Vietnam Navy vet. So I always joke that he told me to do one thing really well, and that was to join the Army and not join the Navy. But grew up in the South Cobb area, not far from like the Six Flags, if anybody's local listening, in the South Cobb. And now I live over in East Cobb. So it's funny, growing up playing T-ball in the Cobb County area is always like the East Cobb snobs, right? And then now I live in East Cobb. I'm like, I finally made it. I'm an East Cobb snob. It's great. It was different in Atlanta back then. For those of y'all that haven't been in Atlanta for 20 or 30, 40, almost 40 years now, East-West Connector didn't connect. The Windy Hill didn't connect to Macklin Road, and the new Brave Stadium was a cow pasture and a lake. And I remember growing up not far from there, and it was great, man. Back really when Smyrna was an old town, if you will, and really, really slower back then. Atlanta's much busier now, and grew up in the woods, really a country boy that turned city, if you will.
Yeah, not much woods out here anymore unless you're walking on the greenway, for sure.
Not at all.
And what kind of student were you, Zach?
Man, it depends how you look at it. Really heavy into athletics. In elementary school, I went through a Christian school. And then middle school and high school is actually homeschooled. Looking back these days, I'm like, man, that's actually a great component. Back then, I hated it, of course. But homeschooling back then was before all the, I think it's really evolved these days where, as Taylor and I have talked about kids, it's probably a great option these days because they have so many resources. But middle school and high school was one of those where it was self-taught. We got curriculum from a university out of Florida, and my mom's like, here you go, learn away. So essentially, I grew up working. My dad had a construction renovations company. I grew up working with him from middle school forward and then did schoolwork on the side and have a good enough diploma, one of those good old GEDs. But I don't know how grades work, but I guess I technically graduated with a GED. And then learned well enough. I think one of the best pieces of that was the self-taught component where you look at what we do these days with entrepreneurship and this entrepreneur world, you got to learn quick and you got to learn a lot of things and be very adaptable. So it's kind of one of those intrinsic pieces to be able to deconstruct and reconstruct really well, where that schooling taught me more of the intrinsic pieces outside of the grades.
Zach's been one of my mentors for starting my side businesses, and some of those lessons are book lessons and others, as we were talking about before we jumped on live. So graduate from high school with homeschooling, GED. What was next for you?
Man, the one thing I always knew I wanted to do is be a police officer. Growing up, I didn't want to be stuck behind a desk. I wanted something free-flowing, wanted to give back to the community. So I knew being a police officer was on the horizon, but you know, you got to be 21 before you can join that. I don't know if I've ever told you this part, and I hate that it's being recorded, but I'm going to admit this. I went to an Air Force recruiter and almost joined the Air Force at 18. Yeah. Ended up chasing a girl instead. Probably should have joined the Air Force. The 3 years between 18 and 21 was really just doing odds and ends jobs, really just stretching until I got to the 21 mark where I could join the police force. And that was the first real job. But, you know, did all the things. I was a bagger at Piggly Wiggly. So anybody wearing Piggly Wiggly shirts, that became a thing. I'm like, why are people wearing Piggly Wiggly shirts? But I was a bagger at Piggly Wiggly outside of Fort Benning down there in Columbus as a civilian. And just trying to, you know, three jobs at a time, going from one to the other to make rent in my really terrible apartment that was about 500 square feet. And then I remember I was so poor. Piggly Wiggly would have these 5-pound cases of corn dogs that nobody ever bought, right? So when they expired, that would be my dinner for about 2 weeks. And great learning opportunities, man, yeah. And a great way to figure out how to start adulting.
Yeah, I remember being that poor, you know, being a 18-year-old airman basic, getting married, living off the cheap 80%, a lean hamburger meat. So that would come in big, like, 8-pound.
Oh, yeah. And ramen. Yeah. Dude, I had so much ramen in my time. Like, I still like it for some reason, but so much ramen.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah. So which police force did you join?
I was with Smyrna PD. Joined that 20 and a half or so. They let me have a run into when you can join the academy at 21. Spent just shy of 7 years there, but did all sorts of stuff. I was on the SWAT team, did some narcotics undercover work all across Atlanta. That was one of the nice things about policing back then. I just realized I've been out of the police world for 10 years. So I'm like, bang, I really am getting old after a decade of being out of something. But back then, there was a lot of cross-departmental training opportunities and interaction across Atlanta. So really had a lot of fun all across with some different organizations.
So let's talk about the Dance Academy you helped start up.
So it is actually bridging my 2 weeks from the police department, went into basic training. So it was kind of in that in-between phase when I went to basic training, officer school, infantry school, was about a year and a half of training. And I knew I didn't want to get back into policing. That was 2016 when I left. So I actually started a different company first. Talk about the serial entrepreneur component. The first company I started, as any other police or military guy does, I started a security consulting firm in 2017. It still exists, amazingly. Not super profitable anymore. COVID really crushed us. We were doing a lot in the schools and churches, a lot of active shooter training, stuff like that. I was still active duty on Fort Benning and started a media company that we then launched a worldwide dance competition the month after COVID. I had a business partner that was a professional dancer. He used to dance with Justin Timberlake. He was in Pepsi commercials, did all the things. And as many of us during COVID, everything kind of went sideways. And he had a really awesome sales consulting firm. Lost all the clients, no different than the security firm. You know, people stopped going to church, stopped going to in-person stuff. So physical security wasn't one of those things that was really utilized much at that point. So we got together and he said, man, I want to get back into dancing. I'm like, cool, I don't dance. I have a mean 2 left feet. I can do a 2-step and wag my fingers and that's about it. And he said, don't worry about that part. I just need help with the operational side. So as we built that, we actually scaled that to 155 countries in the first 8 months. So we got a pretty significant offer for it. But we're shipping 5G wireless pucks all across the world. We really took the concept like World of Dance or America's Got Talent, American Idol, stuff like that. It flipped on its head where a lot of people across the world couldn't afford to come to the United States for those talent competitions. So what we did is instead of, you know, making people come this way and in COVID, you couldn't really travel like that. We took the TV show, if you will, we did 2 episodes a week We took that to them and really shifted the dynamic of how we could reach the audience. And it just caught like wildfire, man. We had several high caliber people on there from judges. We had Lady Gaga's choreographer as one of the judges. Chasen, and his last name's escaping me at the moment, but he was a rapper in the early 90s that was in a boy band. I mean, it was an amazing project, and it taught a lot about business. How do you grow things? How do you scale things? How do you think outside of the box, especially during COVID when a lot of industries are really suffering? How do you adapt to it? But it went crazy, and I still never danced on the show. So that's why I think why it was such a success, honestly.
Well, you have two left feet. I've got two right feet, so maybe we should get together and try it next summer.
Do a tango, right?
So you talked a little bit about why you wanted to leave the police force, but why the active duty United States Army?
A big piece was I knew I wanted to serve still. And at this point, I was 28. And I looked back at that 18-year-old full of piss and vinegar, knew everything in the world kid. And I still have a lot of that component to me. But I look back and I'm like, man, if it's not now, then it's never going to happen. So the military was always one of those call-ins I wanted to join. The funny part was I went into an Army recruiter and I said, this is the track I want. I literally had it mapped out with the officer candidate school, with infantry school, and that path. And I scored in the 97th percentile in the ASVAB. And he was like, are you sure you want to go into Army infantry as an officer?
You'd be in the Air Force? That's probably what he said.
he essentially said, you can have any job in the military you want. Are you sure? No, he didn't tell me all the other jobs I could have had, right? That was really the bigger calling. And I saw the military, specifically the Army, as an opportunity to really test leadership skills. I was really fascinated and still fascinated and study leadership as a whole and really look at what makes a good leader. My podcast is focused on that and really dissecting what makes a good leader. And my thought process was, if I can go into combat and when the bullets start flying, can you say two words and everybody moves without question? And leadership, understanding leadership is just influence. If I can influence people while bullets are flying to do what you're recommending, then that's really the best test of leadership. And careful what you ask for, because that's exactly what ended up happening.
Yeah. And then, so you go through OTS. Were you stationed at Fort Benning, your first assignment?
Yep. Fort Benning for 18 months. And then I got transferred over to Fort Stewart.
Okay.
That's where I got attached to 10th Group. So we had to train up. It was either go to Ranger school and keep going through training for another little while. And I was qualified and had a slot and was ready to go. And then the opportunity came up. Hey, you can either go to Ranger school or you can catch this deployment, get attached to Special Forces and go see combat. So I took that route. I got attached over to 3rd Infantry Division down at Fort Stewart and deployed out of there about 6 months later.
And where'd you deploy to?
2019, Afghanistan. It was funny leading up to it. Everybody's like, why are you going to Afghanistan? Is there still a war happening over there? Like, people didn't have context because at that point, that conflict, Middle Eastern conflict, even though it had been going on for 30 years, people were like, well, nothing's really happening over there. But come to find out, we were hyperkinetic for the year I was over there. We ran ops every 4 days. Stayed busy for sure in Afghanistan, the northern part. If anybody knows the Kunduz. We landed and it was 8 inches of snow on the ground on New Year's Day. And then by the time we left, it was 130 degrees, like very drastic climate for sure.
And you left a very changed man, mentally, physically. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, physically for sure. Going from the SWAT team when I was a shield guy, first one in the door, you're essentially recruited to be a big, strong, heavy dude. The Army really enjoys small, skinny, running types. So physical was very drastic just in leading up to that. And then during the deployment, I had about 50 guys that I was responsible for, and we ended up losing 6 of them. A couple Green Berets, EOD guy. Will and Joey were our first two. We were about 5 weeks in country and got into our first tick, if you will. We were ambushed on an operation and lost Will and Joey, and the mental and physical all shifted at that point, right? All of a sudden, war and combat became very, very real. The leadership aspect during a conflict like that or during an engagement, leadership in the moment is one thing. Something I didn't think about was leadership after that moment. Like, how do you actually keep guys motivated after you've lost some guys, or how do you keep guys reeled in? You know, when you're trained for one thing, and that's go pull a trigger and go do things that a lot of people have never thought about doing? How do you actually reel that in a little bit when your friends and your brothers are lost in the middle of that? So it was a very interesting dynamic. And we can talk more into the PTS world and talk about that. In that moment, it wasn't about PTS by any means. It's like, how do we keep going for another 8 months?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. And we'll go on to your transition. But you also, in addition to the, you know, the PTS, which is just natural, and you have, you know, your troops dying around you. What about physical? Did you like screw up your shoulder, your back? Do you have to have some physical elements coming out of there?
Yeah. And you know, you never realize in the moment. It's interesting. I have a partially torn quad still. Before I went over, I had ACL, MCL, meniscus replaced. I broke both feet in the train up for it. A lot of guys get hurt in training and you never think about it, but you know, a 20 kilometer movement with 80 pounds on your back, things start breaking very quickly. And then on the deployment, everybody gets bumps and bruises, but nobody wants to go home. So nobody talks about it. You don't say, oh man, this hurts or that hurts. You kind of just put duct tape and keep going, right? So I actually didn't find out about my arm injury until about a year after the deployment is when I came back and things started acting funny. I went down to do pushups back on Fort Benning, dislocated my thumb, popped it back into place because that's what you do, right? And then all of a sudden, everything from my elbow down went numb. And fast forwarding a little bit, come to find out I had compressed the nerve in my elbow during the deployment. And I wish I had a really cool story about it, right? I'm like, oh, well, I was doing this, I was doing that. A pack of velociraptors. No, nothing cool. Just at some point during that deployment, you just get so beat up, things happen. And I come to find out that nerve was almost severed in my arm and had to have what came to be a pretty intense surgery to move that nerve and keep it from severing completely. But never knew about it till a year and a half later, which is the crazy part, right? As your body starts trying to heal itself, you find out real quick how many things are not really healed.
Yeah. And that's about the same time we met, isn't it?
Right about. It's actually, so the full timeline of events, I came back right at the end of 2019. So the dance competition happened about 3 months after I got back when we launched it right in the middle of COVID. I was going back through more training at Fort Benning. And then fast forward a year is when while I was on Fort Benning, I had the surgery in March. And you got to love the Army. This might be just an Army thing, so I'll throw some shade on the Army for a second. I was in Captain's Career Course going, I already selected to be a commander, take over an entire unit, and was injured during that training, or found out about this injury during the training. They said you had to have surgery on Fort Benning. God love them. I'm like, no. I know doctors in Atlanta that do this a lot. How about I go back to Atlanta and I get a specialist on it? And they said, nope, you got to do it on Fort Benning and you have to do it before the graduation of this training. So 2 weeks prior to the surgery was when we were offered a very substantial amount of money for that dance project. And then the week in between was one of the worst, darkest days of my life. And you know my story, you know my journey, but and we can dive more into this piece of it, but the suicide attempt aspect of my life was there. And then the week of the surgery, I showed up to the final exam the next morning, high as a kite still. They wouldn't let me reschedule anything. They wouldn't let me move it. So somehow all that homeschooling from years ago, the self-taught piece of, I think it was kind of like Rain Man. I was still so high on the surgery drugs that all the answers were kind of floating around me and I was able to pass that exit exam. And then the next week I came back to Atlanta to start rehab, and that's about the time we met.
Yeah, but I remember meeting you very well. That was the day people would line up at the summits to talk to me in 15. I remember talking to you and going, yeah, that this guy's pretty cool. And then my wife, Suzanne, was a big Zach Knight fan, and she would call me on my ride home, and I really liked her perspective. And that conversation was all about Zach Knight. You need to get with him and get, I think he's something special. He could bring something special to Atlanta. So I'm not going to go your whole, you know, struggle story. I saw it personally, but let's talk about how you brought yourself out of this. I specifically want to talk about the self-love component of it. And because I think that's really special that you had your roommate give you some really phenomenal advice that you followed and it helped, you know, scratch your way out and bare knuckle your way out of the funk that you were in.
Yeah, and to put a little bit more context, on paper, I had an MBA, was offered a lot of money for a project. At that point, I was 32 years old, so seemingly successful on paper. And then absolutely internally miserable, was at the end of a dock after an entire bottle of bourbon, had a pistol in my mouth ready to go. Divine intervention stopped that moment. And then fast forward, graduate from that training. And the bad part that a lot of, I think, vets don't ever really talk about is I had already talked to probably a dozen therapists and knew something was wrong. And everybody's telling me to go to therapy, get all the mental health stuff. And kept coming to reasons to disqualify them. Nope, not this person because, not this person because. And in reality, I just didn't want to do it, right? Stubborn male. None of us want to talk about our feelings, right? So I moved back to Atlanta. And during that window of that year of 2021, the first 4 months, I'd essentially alienated everybody. Friends, family, was going through a really bad divorce. And essentially just like lit my world on fire and really isolated myself, which is a commonality in the veteran space. We really isolate ourselves. Don't want anybody to see the cracks in the foundation or the perceived weakness. So I moved back and have a friend, Jesse, who's a Navy guy. God love the Navy guys. He moved a sofa into his kid's playroom just so I had somewhere to sleep because I had nowhere else to go at that point. And we were having a conversation one evening and, you know, he's like, you do all this external learning. You have your MBA, you have an alphabet. I have so many credentials behind my name. You've always done this external learning and you're a student of life. But the one thing you've never done is look internally. You've never looked inside to learn about yourself. And I'm like, ah, that's a weird way to look at it, but okay. He's like, actually, I'll challenge that even further. He's like, I think you don't even love yourself. And I started laughing in his face, you know, the bravado of the army guy and the police officer. I started laughing. I'm like, man, I love me some me. You'll never find anybody that loves him as much as I do. And he's like, okay, go upstairs, look in the mirror and tell yourself you love yourself. And I'm like, too easy. So I stomp upstairs. I get in front of the mirror and I'm like, I love, and immediately had an anxiety attack for 2 hours. Balled in the floor, just couldn't breathe, couldn't do anything. And literally the recognition where you think your lowest point may be, you know, a suicide attempt or near suicide attempt. And then the reality of rock bottom for me was that moment where you couldn't even tell yourself you love yourself. So then I really got serious in a lot of ways about how do I actually find help? Because I think part of what I was going through during the surgery, everybody kept telling me, and this is where I really started isolating, is everybody like, oh, you're fine. Everything's going to be fine. It'll be better. It'll get better. And in that same moment, I couldn't tie my own shoes, could barely get my shoes on. I have a pretty solid medal set on my chest at that point when I was still in and couldn't even pin my medals on my uniform to graduate. And I'm like, it's not fine. So every time somebody told me it was fine or it'll be okay, I instantly internalized, you're lying to me. Everything you're saying is a lie to me. And I disqualified everybody in my life because I just thought everybody kept lying to me because I knew it wasn't fine. And where I started pointing fingers externally in that moment, after I had that anxiety attack and after I realized I really am not fine, it was a really relieving moment for me. It was really freeing where the thought, and so many people said, don't say this, but I think it's such a great recognition point for me personally, was that I finally realized, oh man, I am broken. But it's not my arm where I still don't have feeling in half my hand. It wasn't the surgery that went bad. It was that my mind was broken. And where that was such an empowering thought to me was I'm really good at fixing things. So for me, it went from I am broken as a thought to that's awesome. Now I can figure out I can fix things. So instead of thinking everything's fine and everything's wonderful and there's nothing to fix, which essentially was what I was internalizing, shifted to, oh, no, I am broken, but now I at least am empowered to find a solution and find an answer to go fix myself. And that's where my book, A Legacy of Love, A Journey of Self-Mastery, that it was that whole process. And I really wrote that not for myself, but really for my soldiers to put the vulnerability out there, highlight not everything's fine, especially internally, even though it may look fine. And if you can recognize what's broken and then recognize there's empowerment there to go fix it. And take that action. And that's really what the book highlights is that journey.
And what are some of the, how'd you fix it? What are some of the stuff you took?
A big one was I actually did get into therapy. I went through Emory here in Atlanta, has a great program. I did their outpatient program. Finally found a therapist that challenged me. And I think that was part of my issue with a lot of the therapists I was talking to. It was like, oh, you're fine. Let's just talk a little bit. I'm like, no, you're just telling me the same thing everybody else is telling me. And then their intake process is a 3-hour interview. And it was painful. It was so painful. And the guy that became a therapist, he was like, you know, you keep blaming yourself for Will dying. You keep blaming yourself for Joey dying. You keep blaming yourself for everybody dying. And you have this survivor's guilt. Have you ever thought about blaming the person that actually pulled the trigger? Because that wasn't you. And he challenged me in a way that opened me up to, oh, hang on, let's actually have a conversation about that. And he did it so eloquently that really was the foundational element of shifting that mindset. But then there's several other components on top of that. You know, I started meditating, which is painful for a lot of people. But I found one thing that was really relaxing. Classical music is very relaxing to me. So I would put on headphones for 7 minutes. I would time it. And it was so painful to do the first couple times. But I would literally put on a timer, listen to classical music for 7 minutes and work on breathing, just box breathing. Super simple, but just to like steady the mind. Started doing a lot of gratitudes. So every morning I still do it on my mirror in my bathroom. So whenever I go to the bathroom, I see the three things I'm most grateful for. And I write those on my mirror every morning. Behind me, I have a generational hand-me-down stand-up piano that was passed down. It's been in my family for 5 or 6 generations. And I've always had the idea of learning to play it because it came from my great-grandmother who passed a couple years ago. And my grandmother was going to get rid of it. She's like, well, nobody plays the piano. We're going to get rid of it. And what I was beating myself up about so much was like, well, I never took the time to learn the piano. I'm never going to be able to golf again. I can't ride my motorcycle anymore. And there's a moment of realization. I was actually on my way back from Fort Benning. It was a post-op appointment and it was storming. I remember it so vividly. It was like one of those whiteout storms going back from Fort Benning and it was just miserable and traffic. And it kind of hit me. I'm like, man, the only person that's telling me I can't play the piano is the guy looking at me in the mirror. So on the way home, I literally started calling around to different places. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to learn to play the piano. So I found a piano. It's sitting just on the other side of my computer. And I got obsessive about teaching myself how to play the piano, even though with weighted keys of the piano and not having any grip strength in my left hand, I couldn't press the keys properly. So I had to like teach myself a different technique to play the piano because the really enlightening moment was like, if classical music is such a relaxing thing to listen to, how empowering would it be to actually create it myself? So for the next several weeks, I spent 6, 8, 10 hours a day just learning how to play music. And within that time frame, I was playing Bach and Beethoven. And it was a form of meditation. And it was a way to say, no matter how injured or broken my body was at the time, there really was hope on the other side. And I was telling myself I couldn't do these things. So how do I prove to myself I could? And nobody's ever heard me play the piano. It's still not great. I am not ever going to end up doing a concert by any means. But it's just one of those things that signifies to me, like, I am capable as long as we have the forethought to not self-defeat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you want to talk sound immersion yoga?
Man, one of the weirdest experiences of my life.
So.
And I have to say, it did get relaxing enough that I'm pretty sure I fell asleep a couple times, which is kind of the point, right? You got to relax enough.
So the Zach, when my late wife passed away, Zach was there for me in a big way, like so many of my brothers and sisters in Atlanta were. And Zach, we talked about box breathing because box breathing really helped me. We talked about yoga and the yoga really helped me. And then Zach was like, hey, brother, if you ever need me there for anything, I'll be there. And like a week later, an opportunity came out for to participate in some sound immersion yoga. And it was a little bit too hippie for me to go by myself. I needed a wingman or a battle buddy, whatever. So I called Zach up. And without hesitation, he was like, I'm there for you. And then...
And to be fair, I didn't know what the heck it was. I didn't know what I was agreeing to either, to be fair.
And to be fair, it was pretty weird. We get there And I can't say it was earth-shattering or anything, that it was an experience. Probably what was more therapeutic for me is we went out to dinner afterwards and had this great conversation what the future is going to look like. And then he went again with me. And the second time was a lot better. And he actually fell asleep. I think I probably fell asleep. And so I always appreciate that. I learned a lot from you, and you were there for me in a big way. So thank you. So one of the things I really want to dive into,
can I interrupt real quick? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I think there's a great piece there, and I always appreciate you bringing up the story because it's such a great memory and bonding point for us. But the fact that you had the courage to ask, right? And I think there's such an important piece there for veterans, because I didn't do it. I didn't ask anybody for help. It was that isolation where I didn't think anybody could help me because I thought nobody understands what the hell I'm going through, right?
Oh, yeah.
And to a degree, it's a human condition where all of us think it's the worst thing happening. Nobody knows anything that I'm going through. The fact that you had the courage, I want to shout that out. You had the courage to say, hey, man, I want to go do this thing, and it might be kind of weird, and I just really need somebody there with me. That is just a testament to who you are as a human, as a man, as a friend, that I don't think we do that enough, right? So I have to shout that out back to you. It was like, props to you for even asking. It was weird. I'm never going to say it wasn't weird, but the fact that you at least asked, I think, was just monumental in identifying who you are.
All right, let's get off of that before I start tearing up. So, I really want to spend some time talking about ATL Vets and both the nonprofit side of the house, and as you're expanding to the different cities. And then I want to take a big dive back into the entrepreneur side and talk about where you're at there, what's worked, what hasn't, and then what the future. I know you've learned a lot of lessons. Let's get into ATL Vets. So one of the things I really liked is, so you come out, you start volunteering for Vetlanta. And for those of you, the viewers and listeners, if you don't know about Vetlanta, we're just a club. We're not a 501c organization. We don't do any fundraising. We operate off of sole in kind. We're not a service organization. And we're also only focused in the greater Atlanta area, which is the 22 counties. One of the things I love that you did, and you've done very successfully, what other people have tried to do, but not successfully, you're like, hey, I want to find something that's going to complement Vetlanta, and then also be something they're not. You know, I'm going to be a nonprofit. I'm going to be a service organization, and I'm going to be able to go outside of the bounds of Georgia. So, can you talk a little bit about your mindset and starting that, and really where you're at today? Did you ever envision that, and is it much different from what you originally thought it was going to be, or is it kind of how you were planning it from the start?
I will say first and foremost, for anybody that has a thought about starting a nonprofit, don't freaking do it. Oh my goodness gracious. Think long and hard. For all the businesses I have and do own, founding ATL Vets, and ATL is a play in Atlanta. I wanted to draw back, and you told me this, Atlanta is not seen as a veteran city nationally. And there are a lot of chapters of national organizations that are here that aren't supported as well because people don't see Atlanta as a veteran city, right? I know that's a big shift that you're really pushing hard on, is really recognizing, because Georgia as a whole is like the sixth largest veteran community in the country. But the nonprofit space is one of the most freaking difficult, man. People say they want to collaborate, and that is not true at
it's
all.
A different C word. It's the different C word. They want to compete. Actually, they don't want to compete. So they see you as a threat. Absolutely. So
it's insane. And collaboration it's truly the place I started. When I saw with Vetlanta, and this is by no means taken away what you've done with Vetlanta, part of what I saw missing was the quarterly summits are phenomenal. What happens between them? How do we keep the continuity? And then being a chartered club has its own challenges. There's no money. There's no bank account. There's no finance. So when you look at how do you grow, how do you impact, how do you scale, becomes a whole different challenge. So truly, like, ATL Vets started in two veins. How do I plus up the resources of organizations that deserve it, Vetlanta being the foundational first one? And then secondarily to that, I kept going through these other programs, and I won't go down my list of, but a lot of organizations really focus on the 3 to 4 year veteran that is 22 years old. Here's how you fill out a resume. Here's how you get a warehouse job. Here's how you put on a LinkedIn profile. And then on the business side, here's how you file an LLC. Here's how you think about sales and marketing. And at that point, I'd already been offered 8 figures for that dance project. I had already had multi-six figure businesses. I'd already had my MBA. I'd already had the professional career on the police side, 10 years of professional life prior to the military. I don't mean any disrespect to organizations, but I kept getting offered these basic services that I'm like, y'all, I'm past this. And at one point, going through an entrepreneurial cohort, I ended up teaching it. And I'm like, this just doesn't make sense. Where's the now what? I've been through the transition. I've done this. I've done that. Now what do I do? And I couldn't find the now what. So with ATL Vets, the idea is, how do we truly collaborate and become a magnifying glass to people making a massive impact across the country? And then how do we solve for now what? And it's been incredible. We're almost to the peak of Mount Everest with our Veteran Center of Excellence. Every branch of the military has a schoolhouse, right? For the Army, it is Fort Benning, the Maneuver Center of Excellence. Everything that happens in the Army goes through Fort Benning. Basic training, officer school, infantry school, airborne. There's this one building where the learned knowledge happens. It's a classroom. It's a schoolhouse. And in the veteran space, there's nowhere for us to learn how to be a citizen again. And that's something that this morning General McChrystal said. He's like, it's not necessarily being a civilian. It's how do you be a citizen? And it's such a great reframing, because most veterans are never taught to be a successful citizen after the military. How do you contribute? How do you find your place? And that's what I've really seen ATL Vets evolve into, is we're able to plus up things like Vetlanta, where we can create some continuity, we can enhance the community, we can put a magnifying glass. Like, Vetlanta's all over our stuff. So if you see us in Tampa or Dallas or Nashville, well, Vetlanta's seen right there. So if anybody ever comes to Atlanta or moves to Georgia after the military, you know Vetlanta's forward facing. I've got to be a part of that world. And we've done that very well. We had a young guy retire out of Huntsville, and he's like, hey man, the wife wants to move to Tampa, and I've seen your stuff, and I see you're in Tampa a lot. Can you get me plugged in? Well, absolutely. Here's a list of organizations you need to go to that are vetted, and I think they're phenomenal. And then on the now what piece, all of our programs are designed very differently, which has been its own challenge. A lot of what we were told is, why another veteran organization? We already have a veteran organization. There's so many nonprofits, 11,000 nonprofits in the state of Georgia. So I'm like, well, if every nonprofit was great at what they do, and if every veteran government agency was good at what they do, we wouldn't have 22 a day. There wouldn't be a gap where veterans still need something. So obviously there's entrepreneurial plight, there's something missing, and I can attest for it because I couldn't find it. So all of our programs, we just rolled out 4 new ones this year. We just launched our mobile app. So our Leadership Institute is on Apple Store, it's on the Google, whatever Android uses, the Google Play Store, whatever that is. But our mobile app just went live with our Leadership Institute, and all of our programs are designed to be a continuity development. There is no traditional graduation. It's not a 3-month cohort where you're going to get waterboarded with information and then be sent off into the world to go succeed, because that's kind of the problem, right? Is there's no continuity. And if you look at the military, if you stay in the military, if you get in, I got in as an E4 and got all the way up to O3, there is a track. They put you on this railroad track, this train track. And if you stay in long enough, they will give you the next school, the next assignment, the next thing. When you get into the civilian world and you become a citizen, there is no path for you. And it's really hard for veterans after 20 years. And most of the veterans we serve are that 15 or 20 year individual that gets out and is like, now what do I do? The civilian world isn't cut and dry like that. You don't necessarily know where you can make your mark. You don't necessarily know the next step. You get into the corporate world and there's no clear-cut path for advancement. So our programs are designed in that way. We don't graduate you. We elevate you to the next level. So it's all about continuity development. We just rolled out a men's program, a women's program. We're launching our spiritual education program, which is something that you've inspired in so many ways for us to figure out how can we make an impact in the spiritual side of the veteran, kind of going back to that PTS, deeper conversation about moral injury and how do we solve the head-heart issues that a lot of us face. And then we just rolled out a manufacturing pathway with Georgia Association of Manufacturing that is a multi-year track that solves retention rates for manufacturing and for veterans. But it's all about that continuity, and that's where we're different. You're not going to come to us for 3 or 6 months. We're going to figure out what is your individualized roadmap? How do we plus you up and keep you going in the right direction? And then now we're in 12 states. We've just brought on 5 new team members since the first of the year. 6, actually. Our chief development officer starts Wednesday. And as we grow geographically, as you find out about us, we're going to highlight local veteran organizations making an impact in San Diego. Perfect. Here's where you go when you're in San Diego, because we're not the end all be all. We want to collaborate with the people in San Diego because it makes so much more sense for you to be in person with them and then come to us on a broader scale than it does for me to say, yep, I'm the guy in San Diego. Well, I'm not. So that collaboration effort and that now what solution is really where we've grown. And it's been incredible. We got a lot of work to do, but we've hit some really awesome success points, and we turned 3 years old in 2 months. So it's incredible to see how quick we've grown.
Yeah, man, 3 years, it seems like 30. I'm sure that you agree.
Well, I had hair.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you. So I'm not only proud of you, I'm proud of some of the folks that helped you along the way, Taylor being one of them. You're doing a great job. So what does the for-profit side of the house look like for you these days?
Man, so I mentioned the security firm. I still have it, actually. I have one client here in Atlanta that it takes up a lot of my time. Started as a security consultant, and it has shifted and morphed into an operational component. Still have the media company. I don't talk a lot about either of those because they're not the purpose and passion of what I really want to focus on. But the media company, our first pillar in ATL Vets is marketing. So a lot of what you see media-wise from photographer, videographer, web design, capabilities a lot of nonprofits don't have. My team built our app. We have a full online community, a virtual community, asynchronous learning, virtual training platform. So that media company designed all that for us, and that team built that out for us. Well, we're in a totally different level than an organization at 2.5 years old with minimal funding should be able to accomplish. So the media company is still going really strong. But outside of that, about 2 years ago, I started a private equity firm with 2 Navy guys. God love them. Had to diversify a little bit. But our private equity side is really, it's all an ecosystem as you start thinking about it. How does one play into the other and support the other? So the private equity side, we acquire companies, and then we take veterans out of ATL Vets. We have an entrepreneur track. And in that track, it's our senior leader track. If you have a business and you want to scale it, that track's for you. However, if you want to not start your own business, but you want to become an owner of an 8-figure company, that track is designed to teach you all the business. How do you run a business as a whole? And then Patriot Growth Capital, the private equity side, recruits veteran and veteran family members out of that program. And then we put them on a 6-figure salary and put them through a 5-year practical MBA where we teach that person to change light bulbs, vacuum the floor, everything you need to know about running that 8-figure company. And then at the 5-year mark, we have a transition of ownership for that person into owning that company. And then the beauty of that is the private equity firm grows. There's a 5% rev share back to ATL Vets for our sustainability model. And it's growing. I knew nothing about private equity 2 years ago, and it has been a journey of acquiring businesses. And we actually had an acquisition this past September and placed our first veteran family member to be the owner operator of that company in November. And it's been a wild ride, man, and lots of lessons learned there. If I look back at, do I start a business? Do I buy a business? Buying a business is a great solution. And part of it that's a limiter for, in my mind, was I don't have, you know, $10 million to go buy a company. The acquisition we got is a $14 million in revenue arts and crafts company. So Patriot Growth solves for that. We can get the capital. We just need the veteran community that gets trained, is open to learning something new to then be placed as owner operators. So a lot of lessons across all of those, but the real tie-in is it's an ecosystem. Each one of them feeds the beast, if that makes sense. So where a lot of people look at what I do personally, like, man, you're scattered, you're doing so many things. I'm like, yes, and I'm doing a lot of things that support the central mission, if that makes sense.
And by the way, you have a job?
So that's the security client that turned into a job, turned into a lot of hours. They brought me in as a security consultant originally, and then it's evolved into a senior vice president of operations role, where now I manage 8 departments of a very large institution here in Atlanta. So that's the good and the bad of entrepreneurship, right? You do a really good job, and then they keep offering you more, and then you keep saying yes, and all of a sudden it evolves into a full job, it seems like.
So so you got a lot going on. What do you and Taylor do for fun?
I would love to say we spend the weekends, you know, gallivanting around the world, but these weekends are spent on my doctorate writing papers. So what is fun? Let's see. Date night. God bless Taylor, man. I cannot speak enough about partner selection, especially as veterans. It's so key. And you know, Tay, she is just a superstar. She's the better three quarters by far. Yeah. I met her right when I moved back to Atlanta. So she saw all the dark and the dirty and the messy. And she saw potential also. And she stayed by me in so many ways. And one of the big standards we set, because veterans are great at being mission-oriented and we're great at being task-oriented and great at being focused. The bad part is we get out of the military, we keep that same mindset of like, business is now the focus, right? So you get mission oriented and then you're so focused, you're doing so many things. But one standard that we've kept is 5 o'clock on every Friday is Tay time. And we have a date night every single Friday. It's usually queso and margaritas. And that's her cheat meal for the week. You mentioned the puppy dog. We have she turns a year old in a week. She got me a Belgian Malinois for my birthday last year. And it's family time, bro. Like we don't have any kids yet. So it's like, you know, going to the park on the weekends is amazing. Like taking the kid to the park. I taught Rogue how to play soccer. So now I go play soccer with her for hours at the park. And it's like the small moments, man. Like right after this, she's got dinner ready for me. We're going to just veg out and watch TV and talk about her day. Right. So there's so many key moments of just stopping to smell the roses. It's a lot of fun for us right now.
Yeah, well, that's good. So I need to learn from you for sure. So the Sarah Knight, I'm listening to you. So. And I'm gonna
that is key. Always listen to your woman. She's always right. That is key.
I'm gonna take some lessons from Zach again. So, well, Zach, thanks so much. And so I appreciate your partnership. I appreciate what you're doing for veterans. Thank you for your service in and out of uniform. And you have any closing comments?
Man, first off, thank you for having me on this, man. I've seen your trajectory and your growth and your dedication to the craft. Atlanta's not an easy thing to run, man. So I got to give you a shout out because you're an inspiration in so many ways that I probably should tell you more about and say more often. But that's a big thing. Get tied into the community. There are some good people out here that really give a darn about vets, really give a darn about your success personally. Just got to make that ask, take the leap, jump in and get involved.
That's awesome. Great advice. And thank you, Zach. And I'm going to close it like I always close it. Well, be like Zach Knight. Be safe, be kind, and be remarkable.
The Tango Tango podcast is proudly sponsored by Supply Chain Now. Join the Tango Tango community for more inspiring stories. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Subscribe to the Tango Tango YouTube channel. And follow and listen to Tango Tango wherever you get your podcasts.